that I've put together. I can do that for you. I haven't printed those off as a necessarily a class outline. I wasn't sure how many may want to do that, but if you'd like to have those, let me know and I can get you a copy of those. We continue on through our study this morning. We're in Ecclesiastes chapter 4, and we want to remember that in the book of Ecclesiastes, the theme, the direction, the emphasis is on our life under the sun. It's the common bond that we all have. It's a common bond that we have with everyone who's come before us and everyone who will come after us. The situations, the things of life are just the way they are. We looked at time, we've looked at other situations, and we'll continue to do that as Solomon considers everything under the sun. And the purpose for that is to try to determine if there's something in this world, some situation, some person, something that we can hold on to that has some benefit beyond this life, if there's something to hold on to. And we know the conclusion he's going to come to at the end of this book, but as we go through that, we don't quite know that yet. We're examining. Remember, Solomon had the ability to have everything. He had a land, he had a people, he had money, he could do whatever he wanted to do. He didn't hold anything back from what he wanted to do as he tried with wisdom to explore everything. And so he's done a lot of great groundwork for us because he's the one who's tried it, if you might say. And so our job is then to listen to him and to glean and to understand what he gained from his experience. And as we do that, we're going to see things that he brings forth that are part of our common experience that we can raise our hand and say, yeah, I agree with that. I can see that. I understand that that's a true thing. Bigger context of the book would be that I would suggest that this is a great book to put us in our place. You know, it's not necessarily an upper, you don't get really excited and feel great about getting out of the book of Ecclesiastes, because at the end of the day, you feel worn out. I mean, yes, you're right, there's oppression and there's vanity and there's trials, and all those things are in place to build us up. We think about that in military terms. The military, they bring you in and they are going to break you down as a person. You think you stand for, you think it's within your power to do something. You think you're in control. The first thing they do is they tear you down so they can build you up to what they want and need out of you as an individual. And so we can say that spiritually, in the human perspective, the book of Ecclesiastes is to help to do that to us, to acknowledge that we are not in control. We do not have the power over anything. We are oppressed, we're in travail, everything's vanity. And that's all to point us in one direction. And so as we use this book and understand this book for ourselves, it seems to me that this is a great place to talk to people in the world about the reality of this world. The reality of this world is that there's nothing here that you can hold on to that's going to get you anywhere, any benefit. And so then the question is going to be, what do we do with that, right? And we can take individuals to other places to explore the answer to that question. Excuse me. So, again, kind of to review some of the words that we're going to see, not only in this chapter, but we've seen already. We talked about these two words, vanity and vexation of spirit. Used somewhere around 39 times, I think 39 times here in the book of Ecclesiastes, 33 times elsewhere in the Bible. So it's a high concentration of these particular words. So when we read them, we need to be thinking about, okay, exactly what's he saying there. Remember, the author here has spent a lot of time contemplating and considering. We don't necessarily do that very much anymore. We're speed readers, instant texting, 2 seconds on the news and we get the whole story. And so here we have someone who's going to contemplate, and we're called to do the same thing. But anyway, these terms, this idea of vanity, emptiness, transitory, unsatisfactory. So when we see that idea of vanity, that's what we see. This idea of vexation, a constant but unsatisfied seeking after something. So it says vexation of spirit, continuing to seek after something and being unsatisfied in what I seek after. Vexation of spirit. It's elusive. So, we're going to see those words several times here in chapter 4. We need to be reminded of them. Excuse me. Travail. Much labor with trouble and fatigue. How many people have felt travail? There you go. Should all raise your hands. Okay. We felt that. So when the author talks about much travail, we should say, I know what that feels like. I understand what that looks like. I can agree with that. He's going to ask this idea of oppression, toil and struggle of temporary things of this world. So this oppression that's going to come, this toil and struggle, and we can raise our hands to that. We've felt that. We understand that. We get the point, what that looks like, what it feels like. So in the occasion that he talks about, when he talks about these words, we should be able to have some insight to that. This idea of consideration, excuse me, as he talks about him considering things, and we're called to consider the same things, what does that look like? What does it entail? So to consider, to see things with thought and reflection. So to see situations, experiences, have our eyes open. Consider. With attention to detail. I don't know what, I guess the example that comes to my mind was, I think I've told the story before, but I'll tell it again. I was in a Safeway. It was in the summertime. Vicki had sent me there to get something. Unlike today at Safeway, all the checker lines were full. They had somebody in every checker's spot, and there were three or four people deep. And the person in front of me, there were kids screaming all around, the store was noisy. The person in front of me was moving, doing some sign language. And I considered looking at the details, not understanding what that looked like, and yet across the store was a young woman, and she was signing back to this man. That was a beautiful little picture to consider, at least for me, in the middle of this chaos, these two people were communicating, and it didn't matter about all the chaos. I was glad I went to the store that day for my consideration. So maybe there's something you consider, some kind of little detail in life that you consider. Take good notice of something. Be mindful of something. Take notice of some issue. Look upon with kind, friendly, compassionate affection. Wow, there's a lot in this idea of consideration. And you know, we want that, and we should give that, and sometimes we don't do neither of those in our lives. But he calls us to do consideration. To respect and to regard. So when he says the word, I considered something, he's looking deeply into something. He's considering it. Not passing it over, not just a momentary thing, but he's going to consider it. He's going to spend some time with it. All right. So, Ephesians chapter 4, verse 1. He says, so I returned and considered. So he's coming back to his main point is to considering aspects of this life and how they reflect us in looking for the bigger picture. So he returned and he's considering. So he's giving all those things we just talked about in his thought process. And he's talking about all this oppression that's going to be here. All the oppressions that were going to be in place. And we talk about that being the toil and struggles that are under the sun. Remember, the purpose is under the sun. On this world in this world that God's given us, that's where we're talking about. We're not talking outside of some other realm, but we're looking at what we are all sharing together. And behold, the tears of such as were oppressed, and they had no comforter. So he's looking at those who are people who are oppressed, and they have tears. They have grief in the fact that they are oppressed by whatever it might be. We might say, well, that must be government. Government must do that. It must be the king. Excuse me. Could be a neighbor. Could be some other situation. But they have tears, and there's this idea of there's no comfort. There's no solace. There's no ability to provide relief for the situation. So there's the one who's oppressed. And then it says, and on the side of their oppressors, there was power. So we have tears on those who are oppressed, and we have power on those who are the oppressors. Don't see much compassion in the word power, do you? Right? Because the ones who they were oppressing had tears. So it must not have been a happy thing, right? But they had no comforter. So even though they may not think that they needed a comforter, the reality was that these people who had power and struggles had no comforter. So, got me thinking, well, if this was government, government doesn't care. It's not a matter of worried about whether it has a comforter or not. So maybe it's talking about and suggesting that this also oppression and power has to do with a more personal level of relationship. That is between men and women. Men and men, women and women, people. There was someone who had power, and there was someone who needed some kind of comfort, we may say, and the person who had the power to provide the comfort chose not to do so. But yet that person who had the power to provide the comfort, they didn't have a comforter either. So maybe they had some issue. And we can raise our hand and say, yep, you know, I can see that. I felt like I was oppressed, and I've known when I've been the one who was the oppressor. We can probably raise our hands to that. We won't necessarily want to admit that, but that's the way it is. We felt that. We know that. So that's a common thing within the world, is this idea of this comforter. Now, the comforter here is this idea of internal world comforter. We may say, well, there's the Lord who's our comforter. Well, we're going to maybe get to that at some point. But right now, the issue is, in this world, man to man, person to person, the situation is, if you're oppressed, you don't have a comforter. And if you're the oppressor, you don't have a comforter. You're not going to be comforted in your situation because of this world. This world was not going to provide that comfort for you. That's where we're at. Therefore, I praise the dead. I want to give some honor to the dead. I want to think that they've got it. And why is that? Those which are already dead, more than the living which are alive. So because of this other statement here about oppression, the fact that there's no comfort, he goes and he discusses this idea of, then who's the one that we should be happy for? Well, he says, I'm going to praise the dead. Yea, better is he than both of they which are yet have been. And why is that? Who has not seen the evil work that is done under the sun. Evil work done under the sun. You know, I don't know if it's because I'm getting older and maybe a little bit more wiser, but this world, every day, you watch the news, the TV, I mean, it gets worse and worse. And I know I remember hearing my folks say that, right? And some of you who are older than me have said that. And you know, it's true. It's amazing. The pressures that are being put on, the decisions that are being made, and the evil work that's done under the sun. It's continual. And you have to wonder, when we look at the bigger picture, why? And that's what he's asking. Why is it this way? So he praises those who haven't even been. Now, we come back here to which is not Ben. This is a personal thing. When you think about a child who is stillborn, dies in very young, and we're torn apart by that. So when he brings this up, you know, I think about that. So he's saying that someone who never got to experience life, never got to enjoy life, we may say, he's saying to him, in this context, it's better that he's not born, not to have to have dealt with all the evil in the world. Because his point is here, is this is dealing with the world, okay? If it's just the world, and there's nothing else, there's no comforter, there's nothing in this world that's going to be beyond, then it's better to not have been born. Because there's nothing but grief. And so, let's see. I'm back here. So, verse 4 then. And again, I considered all the travail and even the right works. Okay, so now he's going to talk about, let's just say that we look at the right works, the things that are right and just. What happens to the guy who goes out and he does the right things? He spends the right time, he does all the things right. But there's travail, so there's work, there's oppression, there's struggle, and he does the right works. What happens? What is the view that he sees? That for this man is envied of his neighbor. So this guy goes out and he does all the right things. He says the right things. He lives his life rightly. And the result of that, what he gets from it, is that his neighbor envies it. Now, let's go back and think about this idea of envy. We'll start here at the bottom one, which is jealousy. Jealousy is a desire to have the same or the same sort of thing for itself. So if I'm jealous of my neighbor because he's doing all the right things, I wish I could have those things too. And so it might propel me to actually do things right so that I can be like my neighbor. Right? It might. But I'm jealous of what he has. Maybe it's, somebody might say, sour grapes. He's got all the good things. He's a goody two-shoes. And so he got all the good stuff. And so I'm jealous of that. But what envy is then, of course, a whole other level to that, which is what he talks about here. That's the desire to deprive another of what he has. I'm envious of you. I'm beyond jealous. I don't want you to have it. I want to deprive you of what you have. I'm envious of you. And that's what he says. The guy who goes out there and does all the right things, his reward from this world, from his neighbor, is that his neighbor wants to take what he has away from him. That's what his reward is for all of his struggles. That's what his neighbor's going to think of him. That's his review at his work or wherever it might be, is that he's going to have that thing taken away from him. And this also is vanity and vexation of spirit. So he says even the guy that's trying to do all the right things in the world scenario, the result is it's all vanity. It's all a struggle. Constantly. The result is what? Vanity and vexation. For the guy who's trying to do the right thing. And you might raise your hand and say, you know what? I try to do the right thing and I feel oppressed by my neighbor too. And I wonder, is it worth the struggle? Why bother? Because the world doesn't care. The world more than doesn't care. The world wants to take it away from you. They don't want you to have at least even that amount of respect. Excuse me. The fool then folds his hands together and eats his own flesh. So what is this have to do with? Well, let's think about the fool again. We've looked at this slide before in the idea of folly. It denotes any deviation of mind from that which is true, good, right, wise, or prudent. So, the fool, it says, is not going to have, he's going to deprive his mind of all those things, He's going to fold his hands together and he eateth his own flesh. He's self-destructive. Okay? He folds his hands together. He's not going out trying to, might say, improve or to take care of himself or to do the right thing. He's within himself. And so he folds his hands together and he eats his own flesh. He just consumes himself. One analogy was this idea of you basically, if your body needs certain things and you just deprive your body of what it needs, you basically eat yourself up, right? You know? So he deprives himself. He folds his hand, he eats his own flesh. So he says in verse 6, better is a handful with quietness. So a handful, you know. Maybe you got small hands or big hands, so maybe you don't have as much as I do, right, or more than I do. But a handful of something with quietness, peacefulness, is what? Get this idea better. Than both hands full with travail and vexation of spirit. Okay? So maybe little's better, right? Little's more. Little's better. So where do we have our life and our priorities? Again, this idea of this travail that would be with our hands, the struggles of this life, all the things that we may try to do. Then he says, and I returned and I saw vanity under the sun. He says, and then there was one alone. Verse 8. So what I see here is, again, a scenario in place. So, you know, we just talked about before, I'm worried about my son coming after me, whether he's going to be a wise son or not, whether he's going to take care of the things that I've built and done. He's suggested to others, you know, you don't know who's going to come after you, taking care of the things that you've done, so that's kind of vanity. So what about this guy who's just by himself? Says, hey, I'm going to do it alone. I'm not going to have to worry about a family. I'm not going to have to worry about anybody. So there's one guy alone, and what's he going to look like? And so, and there's not a second, so there's nobody else. That is, he had neither child or brother, so he doesn't have to worry about a child or some kind of family member. He's all alone. And what is he going to look like? Yet, there is no end to his labor. So the guy who doesn't, who's all by himself, who has no family, doesn't have to worry about baseball games or coming home at a certain time or whatever it is, what happens with somebody like that? He probably works all the time, right? At something. Probably gets consumed by work because there's nothing else in his life, right? So there's no end to his labor. Neither is his eyes satisfied with riches. You know, after a while, he just kind of keeps possessing and possessing and possessing. And there may be a lot of examples about that that show about someone who's a hoarder. And so they keep all these things together. Neither saith he, for whom I labor and brave my soul of goods, for my actions towards my labor. Anything that he is going to look for, he has nobody to work for. There's no real purpose in his life. And so he's out there by himself. He says also, this is vanity and a sore travail. So even if you're going to try to go it alone and do it all by yourself and not worry about all those kind of things in life that are going to be pitfalls and trappings for you, the reality is that's not going to work either. You can't really go it alone. Then to prove that point, he brings up this idea of then two are better. So two are better than one because they have a good reward for their labor. You think of a lot of different examples in this when, and he's going to bring up some here, but we'll think about some others that are part of our society. If you're going to go on a sales call, because I'm in sales, typically if you go with two people, there's a lot more energy with two people there, right? Or maybe you're involved in some kind of activity or craft or hobby, and you know if you got someone who's a kindred spirit to whatever that hobby is, it's a lot more exciting, okay? Now, let's just say Sharon Runner over here. She was She's one I'm concerned about for today's class because, you know, anyway, we had a conversation earlier. But anyway, so if Sharon Renner and I talk about an old picture that she found of her great-grandma, she and I understand that. I get excited about those kind of pictures. Those are fun pictures. Those are exciting because that's something we share, family history and all that kind of stuff. And there may be some other thing so that person that you share that with, it becomes a bond and it becomes strength. And, you know, you might have some other cases where, but two are better than one. There's strength that comes in somewhat numbers. It doesn't need to be 100. It just needs to be one other person, right? And be part of that. They can get a good reward for their labor, whatever that thing is. For if they fall, the one will lift up his fellow. You know, we think about, let's just talk about the Marines, okay? I haven't been a Marine. I know a few Marines. Some of you are related to some Marines, right? And so, you know, one of the things about the Marines is we're not going to leave you behind. You know, you get wounded, we're hauling you out. We're going to come and get you. If you fall, we're coming to get you. And we hear stories and stories of that happening, right? So there's confidence in that team. So we see that in a military action. We may have been walking with someone and that person fell and we actually did pick them up. Maybe you've experienced that. We can also think about this in a spiritual scenario. We could say that there's some strength in someone who needs some help. They had a struggle. And so you're there to pick them up. And so there's, if you fall, the one will lift you up. But he says, woe to him that is alone when he falls. The wailing and the weeping that would be there. He said, woe to that. And so we, you know, have medical alert buttons that we might wear around our necks. So if we fall at home, we can press the button to get somebody to help. Because why? We've fallen and we're all alone. And he said, don't be alone. Right? So we understand that. We understand that concept. So he's gone back to this other point where someone has said, I'm going to go this world alone. I'm going to go this world alone. I'm going to do it my own way. I'm going to be by myself. I'm not going to care about anybody. I'm not going to be involved with anybody. And he said, nope, I saw that. And I'll tell you right now, you don't want to do that. This world needs you to be with somebody. Okay? For he that hath not another to help him up. So if he falls in these, there's no one to help him up. Again, if two lie together, they have heat. But how can one warm alone? You know, we have electric blankets and we have warm houses. And most of us have, some of us probably slept out in the woods in cold weather. I'm sure Allison and some of her fires, even though there's a fire going on, I bet you it's really cold at night in some of those places, right? Okay. And so, you know, we may have heard stories about, you know, how families used to sleep together and, you know, they were all on the outside and whoever was on the outside went to the middle in the middle of the night and you rotated out like this, okay, so you could try to keep warm. And so there's a dependency that we have upon one another in this world that we need from one another. And this is a simple illustration. And it's one that everyone would know. How are you going to stay warm if you're all by yourself? Well, my grandma used to say, I just have a lot of warm bricks. Well, those are hard to keep warm all night long, right? Okay, but how can you be warm alone? You can take this beyond the warmth of the sleeping. It's the warmth of life, you might say. How do you warm one another in your life if you're by yourself? How do you strengthen one another if you're by yourself? You can't really do that, can you? You're all by yourself. So we can warm one another in other ways other than just necessarily lying down at that situation. And if one prevails against him, two shall withstand him. So we see that in a combat situation. You know, you send out a platoon of people, you send out a group of people, but two can watch, what you might say, watch the back, right? You're watching my back, I'm watching your back. And so the idea is if one is attacked or provocated, then two can be of help to one another. And so we can take all kinds of applications to that. We've all felt that. I'm sure that all of us have felt attacked. I'm sure all of us felt that we're the victim, and I think that we've probably had opportunity, hopefully, to be there for someone's back. Okay? And so this is part of our life that's under the sun. And then it says that a threefold cord is not easily broken. And we had that picture as we came into class of the rope. A rope is made up of different cords. Each of those cords is made up of different strands. I think a couple of years ago when did a class on the Proverbs, showed a picture of the cable at the Golden Gate Bridge. And the cable, I forget how big around it is, it's huge, and there's many of them. And that was all a single strand going back and forth, back and forth, back and forth, back and forth, however many millions of times that happened to make a cable or a cord. And it's not easily broken, is it? It's still standing, right? So this idea of this bond that here is in place suggests that as people under the sun, and this need to strengthen one another while we're here is an important aspect of our life. It's an important aspect of it's not going to be the answer to everything, but it is an important part of what we do in this world. It's what we need. We can't go it alone. We need to be part of this cord together. So, verse 13. Better is a poor and wise child than. So, you're going to see a contrast here. We have a poor and wise child. We're going to see how poor this child really was here in a second. But then the contrast then is to an old and foolish king who will no more be admonished or receive instruction. So we see this particular verse and we noted up here on our ATP, I put in P for this point about, well, this might be an indication towards Solomon being the author of the book of Ecclesiastes and the fact that he's bringing forth this question about this king. Is he asking about himself or is he asking about some other king or some reality of the situation? Could be both. So there's this old foolish king, and we see, for out of prison he comes to reign. So it goes back to this idea of this poor and wise child. And so we think about Joseph, okay, don't we? Joseph probably had the greatest rise to power of anyone we could ever think of. He didn't go into prison being some bureaucrat or some vice president who got thrown into prison for a while because of the change of someone's opinion of him and then came out of prison to become the king. He went in as a servant who was a prisoner, who was a nobody, right? And so we see this idea of being poor, but yet a wise child. So out of prison he came to reign. Whereas also he that is born in this kingdom became poor. So the look is that here we've got a king who was raised in privilege, who had all the advantages of privilege, who become poor. And what area has he become poor in? Is it in his wisdom? We have a wise, poor man who's better than a king, old king who will no longer receive instruction. So wisdom requires us to have instruction, doesn't it? And so far better would it be to have a king who is wise than one who came from privilege who would not be instructed or to change. And we see idea then here to consider all the living things that walk under the earth with the second child that shall stand up in his stead. So the idea here seems to be that in all of the generations of this world, is there anyone, any situation that would allow for us to suggest that there's some place in this world where a person is going to find some kind of solace? It's the living which under the sun, the second child would be this generation, this preceding thing that would come that shall stand in its stead. Stand in my place to do the things that I've put in place to do. says there is no end to the people, even all that have been before them. So in all that's happened before, the situation's the same. There's no change. It's kind of cool because, you know, I'm not really alone in all this, and neither are you. There have been thousands of people before us, millions, that have had to live life similar to us. There's nothing new under the sun. We just have to deal with our situation where we're at. They also had come after shall not rejoice in him. The people that come after us, they're probably not going to remember us. This idea of rejoicing is remembering us, keeping track of us, being mindful of us. There's not going to be anything that's going to be a worldly benefit potentially from the world's perspective from me. You know, you might say, well, I left them a will, I left them $10,000. How fast does $10,000 go away? You know, it's gone. And there's nothing that's going to be there that they're going to do that. So there's nothing that's going to be in the future that's going to be a benefit to me that's going to make my world here today better. So this too is vanity and vexation of spirit. The future is not going to be a benefit to me either. All right, we've got a few minutes for any comments or thoughts on this chapter. Anything anybody want to bring forth? Is everybody really excited? Well, we should be, okay? Because Solomon has written these words. God gave Solomon wisdom that we could have an insight into wisdom. We are sitting at Solomon's feet. As I suggested, I ponder this fact that when men and women from around the world who were kings and leadership heard of Solomon's wisdom, they came to hear what he had to say. And I'm pondering that this book is some of the things that he would have told them. When you go back home and you consider your kingdom, you look at all that you have after seeing all that I have, being a little teeny country, and how prominent we are, and how much gold is here, and all the things of this world that people would say are valuable. When you go home and you consider these things, who are you going to give this to? Who's going to take over? How confident are you in the person who's going to come after you that they're going to be wise to deal with the things that you give them? And the answer is, you're not. What about the single guy that's out there all by himself? He can't last by himself. The thought about two are better than one. All these things are things that he would have challenged the kings of every country. You know why? All of those kings, all of those queens, all the people in the court were just like you and me. They had different names and they were raised differently. But they were either, as we saw, someone who was poor who became the king and wise, or the king who became unruly. They were all just people. And they fought the same struggles that you and I fight in our life because we're all under the sun. And these would have been just as challenging of words to them as they are to us, as they will be to anyone else who reads them. And this is where the world is right now. The world is trying to make the world be the answer. And the book of Ecclesiastes said, ladies and gentlemen, it ain't it. And it's coming from a place of power, from someone who could try to do and make the world be the answer. So I think it's powerful because it does just that. It answers the question, this world is not our home. Appreciate your attention this morning. We look forward to next week. Thank you.